Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to another episode of Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. And tonight, we are going to continue our discussion on deities associated with the summer, associated with midsummer, summertime, with the sun. Right now, here in the Northern Hemisphere, we are just a few weeks past the summer solstice. We still have a lot of daylight. Here in Northern Virginia, we have still a pretty good amount of daylight hours available, although the farther north you are, the more minutes of daylight you have in the summer. Now, of course, if you are listening from the other side of the globe, then your winter solstice has just passed. And depending on how close you are to the equator, you may see, or how far away, you would be seeing more or less sunlight. But even so, the sunlight is starting to increase every day by a few minutes. And so while we're talking a lot about goddesses of midsummer, of summertime, the other part of this are goddesses associated with the sun or the sky, brightness. And as we seek to connect or reconnect, reestablish connections to nature, many people connect to that sacredness by also connecting to an aspect of the divine. And so as we talk about this, keep in mind that again, if we're talking about a goddess associated with the sun, well, you can certainly connect with this kind of deity at any time of the year. Not only during the summer months. Likewise, many of our goddesses that we're going to be talking about that are associated with this time of year, with midsummer, tend to be associated with the land, fertility of the land, fertility in a more general sense, and we can connect to these goddesses, these female archetype deities, really at any time of the year, as a way to connect ourselves to nature. And so it can be a way to reinforce and find a direct connection, or even in a part of the world like right now. Again, south of the equator, it's wintertime, and what a great way to establish or reestablish a connection during a dark time of the year than with a goddess that is associated with sun, with the growing sun, and with the future greening of the earth as it warms on your side of the planet. And there are a few that I have seen, you know, many, many times, and within neo-paganism in general, there has been this push to associate goddesses with maiden mother crone, or only with waxing full or dark moon. And the reality was that goddesses of many different cultures that we as modern pagans still seek to connect with had many other purposes than simply being associated with only one thing or only one type of year, time of the year, or only one aspect. And I think it's important to kind of reiterate that all of these are multifaceted goddesses, so that while we may be focusing on somebody as it relates to what we're talking about tonight, know that all of these goddesses are associated with a wide variety of different things. And a lot of them, you see familiar themes with a lot of these goddesses also being associated with fertility, not only of the land, but a lot of times of women, having to do with childbirth or protecting women in childbirth or protecting children. Also associated with love. And so sometimes you'll see fertility associated with love, and sometimes you don't. So there are goddesses that we may associate as being goddesses of love, like Venus or Aphrodite, that may also be associated with this time of year, but also have different aspects. So it can be a little bit of a kind of a complicated thing. So we'll try tonight to focus on the kinds of things with some of these deities that are associated with this time of the year. But just keep in mind that they have a lot of different jobs. They have a lot of hats for a lot of different jobs. They multitask. Who doesn't multitask? Everybody multitasks. So when I think of summertime, I always think about one of the hottest parts of the world, and I think of Egypt, even though it is below the equator.
No, it's not. Egypt is not. It's north of the equator.
It's north of the equator.
North Africa. North of the equator, yeah. Yep.
Oh, okay.
It is. Mediterranean.
But isn't it within, or maybe I'm thinking of African continent.
Well, it is. I mean, Egypt is part of the African continent. It's northeastern Africa.
Right.
About as northeast, almost as northeast as you can get in Africa.
But it is close to the equator.
Hang on.
Processing. Please hold.
Right. I wouldn't say it's close, but the climate is fairly arid because of the prevailing winds and how the weather is patterned, the weather patterns and things. Because it does. Hold on.
It's hot there.
Oh, yeah. North Africa. All of Northern Africa is fairly most all of Northern Africa, except for the areas that are closest to right up against the Mediterranean and the Atlantic there, like in Morocco, most of the rest of Africa is pretty arid. But it's not really close. Here's the equator. Here's Egypt.
Oh, it's much farther north.
It is. It's half a continent. I mean, the equator splits Africa almost midway. So even like Somalia,
but it is arid.
And Nigeria and stuff are still north of the equator. But it is arid. Yeah. Yeah. The whole swath from Mauritania in the west across, you know, Niger, Chad, Sudan, Libya, Egypt, Algeria, even, you know, Saudi Arabia, Iran. I mean, that's kind of a whole swath of that pretty much the same climate across for the most
Somehow
part.
Somehow I had the idea that the whole continent was farther south than it is,
no,
and it's not.
No. I know, right?
So then latitudinally, it is...
It's about equal with Florida.
Okay, when I think about that, then that makes sense to me.
Yeah, Egypt is about as far north as Florida. Yeah.
So it is a warm place, but it's warm and dry.
It's warm and dry.
And...
except for right along the Nile.
Right.
It's
and...
where there's just moisture.
So the kind of seasonality,
uh-huh,
even though it is warmer most of the year,
mm-hmm,
their seasonality is tied to rain, and their seasonality is tied to the flooding of the Nile.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, the rains in the winter, typically.
Yes, with the Mediterranean climate. Yeah, but my head always goes to, when I think of the hottest part of the summer, I think Egypt, because it's an arid climate. And even though it's not...
I know.
At the equator.
Right.
It's farther north than I would believe, than I would think.
I mean, because actually the land masses that are on the equator are more tropical, are more lush. You know, like in South America, you've got, you know, northern Brazil and stuff. I mean, that, the Brazilian rainforest and stuff are closer to the equator. And then in Africa, you've got the DRC and... the, you know, Democratic Republic of Congo, and, you know, those areas that are much more lush, right, equatorial. But I think part of it is because the Northern Africa area is in that transition zone.
Right. It's between the it is located close to the Tropic of Cancer, and the climate between the Tropic of Cancer and the equator in a certain zone tends to be drier.
Right.
So I think of a place that is hot and dry.
But we think of, yeah.
And I think of, you know, a shot, I know, a television has warped our minds, and probably watching the Smithsonian Channel too often, because every time I would see a show on ISIS or one of the pharaohs or something, it's always a bright, sunny day that's cloudless.
Right. I mean, it does, I mean, here's the type of cancer, and it does split right through that arid area there of Northern Africa.
Yeah.
Including Southern Egypt and stuff,
Right.
That's well.
So what does this have to do with goddesses? Well, I think when I think of summer, I think of
Egypt.
Of Egypt.
Yeah.
My head always goes there. And I think of the hottest time of the year and a blazing sun in a bright, cloudless sky. And so I think of Egyptian deities. My head always goes there. Even though I may not always work with these deities, I always think about them. And Isis has always been a particular favorite, along with Bast, and we've talked about her before. But Isis is a deity that is multifaceted. And depending on what part of history and mythology you read from, she's taken on different roles over time. And she's had a number of different jobs, functions, associations, depending on where it is where we read these stories from, we get these stories from. But by and large, she is a goddess that is a mother goddess, and she's associated with fertility, fertility of the land. What I think is actually kind of cool in particular in the importance of Isis is that she's considered to be the mother of all gods. And she is considered to also be the goddess that taught Egyptians how to cultivate, how to grow crops.
Oh, yeah.
And how to take advantage of the Nile as a source of fertility. And so she's very strongly associated with the Nile as as well. And during a particular time of the year, in fact, this is part of her history, part of her story, is that when her mate, when her consort Osiris died, the tears she cried were the reason why the Nile floods every year.
Okay.
That's where that comes from. But as such, she is, again, she's a goddess that is associated with with the fertility of the land itself, with being a protector of women. We see that a lot. And because she lost her husband, Osiris, she's also associated with grief and bringing back the souls of the dead.
Okay.
Now, it's worth noting that, and anybody who studies anything with regard to Egyptian deities is, and with ancient Egypt, is usually fairly aware of gods and goddesses also being consorts of each other. So Osiris was Isis's brother, but also consort. So as she is associated with fertility of the land, but she's also associated with rebirth to some extent because of the role she plays in the afterlife.
Multitasker.
Yeah, but, you know, first and foremost, I think she's considered a mother goddess.
Yeah.
That's like her primary role.
Right.
And, again, fertility and childbirth and love, healing, all of these things that surrounds and are associated with life, giving life, sustaining life, and that's the role that she plays. But she's not the only main fertility deity. There's also another, and that goddess is Hathor. And a lot of times, not exclusively, but a lot of times you will see Hathor or statues or drawings, images that are associated with Hathor's being in the form of a sacred cow. So she's like some of the other goddesses that we're going to talk about. She is associated with love, but she's also associated with fertility. The goddess of motherhood, of love, of joy, fertility, and dance. Dance and beauty. Dance and beauty.
Oh.
Yeah. So she is, although not to the same extent, she is associated with fertility like Isis is,
yeah.
And at some point along the way, she also became associated with the dead. She was, at some point, her role shifted, and she became in charge of providing food and drinks to the dead.
Okay.
So, yeah, early on, she was considered to be the female opposite of Ra. And so she did hold this high role, if you want to put it that way. She was the goddess of heaven and wife of the celestial god Horus and the solar god Ra. But again, later on, she became associated with life after death because she crossed the boundaries between the worlds.
Yeah.
So she was able to collaborate with the dead in their transformation of life after death. So she, and this is not the first time I've seen this crossing over between, the, with these roles between life and death, so that because of the role that that played in Egyptian culture,
mm-hmm.
you see this. And so how do we work with these kinds of goddesses that are not only associated with the land of fertility and life, but also associated with death and with transformation? I think it'd become a very powerful symbol to do transformational work because of what her powers are, what her abilities are with these different phases of the life of people. Yeah. Now, we also have other deities of other parts of the world. So sticking with the Mediterranean region, we've got Juno, Roman goddess, and Venus.
Mm-hmm.
Her, I'm going to say mostly, I don't like to do equivalencies between Roman and Greek pantheons, because I don't think it was truly 100% identical. Some might say that, but
pretty close.
It is pretty close. The Greek equivalent to Venus is Aphrodite. And so what does that have to do with summertime? A lot of times you see some of these goddesses that are associated with love, and sometimes, not all the time, by extension, associated with fertility. Mm-hmm. It's not an always thing, but it is something that you do see. So then we've got, again, Venus associated with summertime, love. But then also, Aphrodite as well. So we do have to throw in a little bit of love goddesses. But what about the sun? Sometimes it is the literal sun. Sometimes it is just light or the dawn. And one goddess that's associated with this is Aurora, is her name in the Greek pantheon. Eos, E-O-S, is her name from ancient Roman culture. And she's not associated with the sun per se, but with the dawn. With that bright light that we see every morning in the sky.
Okay.
And there is, and with all of these, there is this whole separation between the disk of the sun itself, and the light as a separate thing. We don't always see it. You know, some cultures have a literal worshiping of the sun itself. Sometimes it's the light in the sky. So for Aurora, Aurora rode her chariot bringing light across the sky. Yeah. And she brought forth hope in every new day.
Okay.
A related goddess is the goddess, a Greek goddess is Hemera, H-E-M-E-R-A, and her mother was the goddess Nyx, which is the goddess that brings darkness each night. And then each day, Hemera would brighten the world once again with her morning greeting of daytime, but not necessarily the light in the sky.
More of the time of day than...
Maybe so.
Yeah.
yeah. In Indo-European cultures and in Hindu, the goddess is Aditi. The keeper of all life. And, again, different pantheons,
mm-hmm.
different schools of thought on things, different origin stories. Aditi illuminates life as we know it. And she has no mother and no birth.
Oh.
Yeah. She exists for and from all time. It is said that she birthed a large egg that moved into the sky and became the sun. So she is the origin of
the sun
itself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Some have heard of this goddess, a Japanese Shinto goddess, and this is Amaterasu.
Okay.
A-M-E-R-A-T-S-U.
Amaterasu.
And she's the guardian of her people, and her name means great shining in heaven. And so her emblem is the rising sun. I have seen it written like this, but then I've also seen her as an outright sun goddess, a goddess of the sun, and not just associated with being bright and shining, but the sun itself. And you do see that. You know, there's a lot of differences that we see from one culture to the next with how daylight was explained, but then how do we interpret that for a modern audience, or how do you seek to create connections with these goddesses of the light, of sun, of sunlight, of the brightness of the sky? I think you can do a few different things. I think that as we seek to create these connections, we can work with one of these goddesses as a way to connect with maybe sunrise and a brand new day. You see the sun rising in the sky when you get up in the morning. And you don't need an elaborate altar set up. Something as simple as a daily greeting can be enough to help forge a connection with a goddess, with any of these deities, as part of a mantra that you say every day to forge a connection. And then you can also learn more about various goddesses or one of these particular goddesses, do a little more research, find out more, find images so you can build some visual connections. Then maybe also build an altar, or maybe just have a spot of your altar being dedicated to this particular goddess. Many people will light a candle, maybe just a tea light, every morning as part of that. Likewise, if you want to connect with a goddess of the sun, of the daylight, of the brightening day, but you're not always an early riser, in the evening at dusk, you can also have some sort of thanks that you do as a simple thing at dusk, so that hopefully you're not up before the dawn and not home until well after the sun goes down, that you would have time to at least do some of this
right
at some point during the day. So when we talk about other sun goddesses or goddesses associated with summer, and I've run across this goddess before, and her spelling is A-I-N-E. The name is Celtic goddess Anya. And in some readings, she's associated as being a sun goddess. Others, as being associated with the radiant light, not so much the literal sun itself.
Right.
But Anya is her name, and like many Celtic goddesses, there are many different aspects to her. We've seen that before. She is also a goddess of love, but she's a goddess of summer. And there are some associations, and this is kind of no great surprise, given the fact that the Romans conquered the Greeks and brought these deities to the other places that they conquered. And Aphrodite was one of them. And so as a result, there have been some bleed over with some of these other deities with what we see now in some of the writings with the ancient Celts. And there are some associations between Anya, Venus, and Aphrodite. Although sometimes they're more direct, other times they're more vague. While there are many stories about love and happiness, some that surround Anya are kind of depressing as well. So I think it depends on the it depends on the story that you read about her. And Anya, was not surprisingly going to be associated with the trials and tribulations of women, but her brighter aspects are associated with the joys of summer and with love. She, it's believed that she brought luck and good magic to her worshipers. In some stories, she's also associated as being with the being the wife of Manana McGlear. Although, in many stories, she's associated, some stories she's associated with him, others she's associated with other gods. Still other stories she's associated with being married to earlier Irish kings and stuff. But why is she important? Because she was known as the goddess who taught humans the meaning of love.
Anya?
Yes. So, yeah, there is a some noticeable parallels between Anya and Aphrodite because she took many human men as lovers. She did have fairy human children. There's a lot of stories about her escapades. So we do strongly associate love with summertime, and no surprise, because with the greening of the land and the fertility of the land, we also see fertility of animals. And so you always see these associations. So as a goddess of summer, I think as a goddess that's not directly associated with the sun itself, but just summertime, I think she's a good goddess to connect with, to connect with these energies of joy and of happiness and connecting ourselves to this strong fertility of the land. And yes, there are other stories of her encounters with others that don't have a happy ending. So it's not always perfect with her, but I tend to like to focus on these brighter aspects, although as a goddess that sometimes is seen as not having a quote-unquote happy ending, sometimes she's associated with women who have also gone through, or women associate and connect with her because of her not happy ending stories as well. And one of these stories is that a man who did not want to learn the meaning of love but was only driven by his sexual desires, and he raped Anya, so she bit off his ear.
Oh.
And because he did that, and he was a king, in old Irish law, kings needed to have a perfect appearance.
Yeah.
So when he became imperfect, he lost his authority. And this is how she became associated as being a goddess of sovereignty. And she granted power to good people, but took it away from bad ones. So this is, again, a goddess that has some notably different associations with her, but we see that a lot, again, with goddesses around the world. If there's any goddess that you want to choose to work with during a particular time of the year to maybe associate yourself with that season or with the coming season, know that these goddesses have so many different facets. As you dig into lore and stories about them, you'll find so much more that you can connect with to take strength from when it comes to all these different aspects. Again, this story of sovereignty, this is a great example of that. And Anya is not the only goddess associated with sovereignty. One of the aspects of the Morrigan, and the Morrigan isn't a name per se of a goddess as it is a job title, because there are three goddesses.
The Morrigan.
Is the Morrigan,
yeah.
Correct. And one of them is associated with sovereignty, sovereignty of one's self. And in some mythology, she's also part of the triple goddess, but I've also read, again, and this is, she's an, depending on where you read this, either an ancient Irish goddess or an ancient Welsh goddess. So I think everything that I've read suggests that she's Irish. Her origins are Irish and not Welsh. And if there's a Welsh counterpart, she may have a different name, or she showed up in Wales later on, which would not be a surprise when it comes to the Celtic peoples. They weren't just Irish. They were a group of people that came from a number of different places in Europe and traveled across Europe and finally ended up
in a variety of places. But
yeah.
Because there is no, like, the Celtic culture, or because it was varied. You know, there were Irish Celts, and there were Welsh Celts, and there were, Galician Celts in northern Spain.
And then there were the Gaulish Celts, of France.
Of France. Yeah. So, right. So as they, as Celtic culture, as the influence, as they moved, the, and the influence of the Celts and stuff moved through Europe, and, you know, things changed and were different and stuff. And then when the Romans came in and subjugated, subverted, whatever you want to call it, and a lot of them were lost. But yeah, so like that's kind of the thing is like it's so they might be significant in the Celtic culture of Ireland, but not as much out of Ireland. Or they might be Celtic from Wales, and not as much Irish, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And one of the things that, and so sometimes you will see similar names of spelling of a deity, and one of them, and she's not really associated with summertime, but that would be Brigid.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's spelled B-R-I-G-I-D, sometimes it's B-R-I-G-I-T, or with an extra T-E at the end. Or sometimes it's Bride, B-R-I-D-E.
Uh-huh. Brigantia.
Or Brigantia.
Yeah.
And so this worship honoring of Brigid, which for many was originally seen as an Irish Celtic goddess, kind of flowed out and around,
mm-hmm.
and became associated and had her own names within other Celtic regions and lands.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just one place and one location. And I still find this a little confusing, and I've seen this written over and over again. And the last goddess I'm going to talk about is Ceridwen.
Oh.
So in a number of different places, Ceridwen, who many people would connect with as a crone goddess, is also a mother goddess. And so, as a goddess to work with during the summertime, Ceridwen's name shows up. And I find that rather intriguing. I think it's interesting that we would have these associations with her during this time of the year. You know, we say all the time that, you know, a deity can be associated with many different things, aspects of people's life, different kinds of themes like death and rebirth, changing of the seasons, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important to note that while for many, Ceridwen would be a goddess associated with Samhain, with the dark time of the year.
Yes, yeah.
That's not exclusive to her symbology or her significance as a goddess, because she's also considered a mother goddess. And this mostly comes from the fact that in the stories, she had two children already, but the biggest story that most people who've ever written read anything about Celtic mythology and Ceridwen would know about Ceridwen's cauldron and her cauldron of wisdom. For many, the cauldron is the womb's manifestation and the source of all life. But also the power of transformation. And in the story that many of us have heard, various aspects of it, in this story, she was brewing up a powerful potion to give wisdom and I think also beauty to her son, who was not attractive, and her underling, I guess you would call it, his name was Gwyn. I think that's how you pronounced his name. His job was to stir the cauldron every single day.
Yeah.
That was his only job. And
had one job.
He had one job, and he screwed it up. And so what happened? He accidentally got a drop of this potent brew on him, and suddenly he was imbued with all the power of that potion. He had the power of transformation. The goddess was incensed. She was enraged. So there's this whole shape-shifting, you could call it a battle, if you will. She kept chasing after him, and he would transform into something different, and then she would transform into something, an animal that was different, to try to catch him and kill him, and it went round and round until the very end. He transformed himself into a kernel of a grain. She transformed herself into a chicken, and then she ate it. And she became pregnant and gave birth to the child. She, in some stories, she gave away the child. In other stories, she threw the child into the sea. The child was rescued by a prince and his wife, and he became, and his princess, he became, the child became the bard Taliesin, who, and Taliesin means shining brow. The great bard, storyteller, and so you have all these different aspects in this particular story, but the big thing is the transformation from the source of the cauldron, the transformation within Caridwen herself as a mother goddess and giving birth to this semi-divine person who became the prolific storyteller of Taliesin.
Yeah.
And as a goddess who is associated with birth and then death and rebirth, that's also why she's got this really strong mother-goddess connection. So, although it's not, I would say she's not exclusively associated with summertime and warmth and fertility of the land and the greening of the land, she's associated because she's a mother goddess, and because of the changing of the seasons, she's associated with that too, because of this very strong association with death and rebirth, life, death, rebirth, over and over and over, as we see with within nature itself. So there you have it. You've got a brief introduction to a new list of goddesses to explore and work with and meditate with and do research on that are associated with, yes, this time of year, but not exclusively this time of year. And keep in mind that, you know, hey, if you're geographically challenged like I am, no, Egypt is in the northern hemisphere. Know that, of course, these different goddesses have so many different aspects to them that as you work with them and you explore who they are and what they were about, you can, again, reforge your connections to nature, to the divine itself, and to these aspects with the divine, of the divine feminine from so many of these different goddesses. So there you go.
There you go.
And so what else do we have going on in Circle Sanctuary land? Well, the big news is that Circle Sanctuary, yes, I don't know what the cat is doing. He just knocked something over, as he is apt to do, because that's what he does. That's how he rolls. Circle Sanctuary is opening. So we are in various stages of opening. There was a very brief thing that was done
right before PSG.
Right before the virtual PSG.
Community Day.
Yeah.
So
there's going to be another one coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
Which is an in-person event, and if you live anywhere in the Midwestern / Greater Chicagoland / Milwaukee-ish, whatever area, they always need help. What a great way to connect with the land to go out and help clean up. There's all kinds of outdoorsy stuff that's got to be done because nothing has been done or very, very little has been done since March of last year. And this is all to prepare Circle for Green Spirit. So Lunasod, the first harvest, also known as Lammas, is called Green Spirit at Circle Sanctuary, and it is going to be in person this year. So if you go to Circle Sanctuary's website.
But you have to be vaccinated. You have to show
this
evidence
is true.
Of vaccine. So you have to be vaccinated because you want to make sure that it's a safe bubble for people to enjoy themselves in, safe from the coronavirus. So that is a thing, is that you've got to be vaccinated to attend the in-person events right now at Circle.
Right. And so the from 9 to 4... on Saturday, July 10th, is the sanctuary day where they're doing cleanup and stuff. Friday, July 30th through Sunday, August 1st, is the Green Spirit Festival.
Yep.
And again, this is going to be in person.
Mm-hmm. At Circle. It's the first event at Circle since March.
Right. It was before the spring equinox last year that everybody closed down.
Yule and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so their last thing probably would have been Imbolc.
Mm-hmm.
Which is in February. It's blue-ass cold up there, so it's just a one-day thing. But the Green Spirit is, again, Friday, June 30th through Sunday, August 1st, and is the registration open yet?
They have more information to come.
Right.
So they've still got information to post. They don't have it all open yet.
They'll have all kinds of activities going on.
Yep.
including, I'm sure, lots of walks on the land, because there's a number of different paths that you can walk on, all kinds of cool stuff. What have you planted this year that you are seeing come to fruition? What do you still want to plant so that you can harvest it later in the year? And no, we're not talking about the literal planting,
right,
although it can be that. How do you tend, water, and nourish your work so your coworkers, your clients, your family, and your community is nourished? Did I word that? Yeah, so this is some of the...
Okay.
Yep. Honoring what you have planted and are now beginning to harvest. You're now seeing the results of. So it'll be, I'm sure, a great time. Again, you've got to be vaccinated. And stay tuned, because as soon as they have that information up on what all they're going to be doing and registration, I suspect there will be a mad rush of people who all want to
be there. Yeah.
And they typically have camping. So
we've camped there many times.
Yeah.
Green Spirit. It's a good place.
Yep.
Good time. Yep.
Okay. Lots of wonderful places to go and see on that 200-acre nature
preserve. Yeah.
So that's the big thing that we've got going on. And of course, Selena has her shows every week. The new live shows, as well as the encore presentations and a lot of other stuff. So
it's all available on the Circle Sanctuary website, circlesanctuary.org.
Let's see. I played this last night. I might play it again.
Oh, yeah.
I do like it. I'm going to do it. Dave the Bard, because I like this song. The Greenwood Grove.
Cool.
So take care, everybody, and blessed be.
Thank you. type intoxicating. I am the ivy, heed my warning. Yellow broom, I offer healing. Blackthorn sharp for death preparing. The elder is a life of learning. Further distant future showing. Come follow me, come dance with me. Come with me to the greenwood, ghost of magic there to see. The lord of the wild with his fairy kin. Deep within the greenwood grove, we'll dance the magic ring. I am the ghost, I am destroying. From death recreating. Hear the aspen's leaves are whispering that you is death and life returning. Come follow me, come dance with me. Come with me to the greenwood groves of magic there to see. The lord of the wild with his fairy kin. Deep within the greenwood grove, we'll dance the magic ring.
Joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.